Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Gideon Levy, who is an Israeli journalist who writes for Haaretz and is the former spokesman for Shimon Peres. His books include Twilight Zone, Life and Death Under the Israeli Occupation, and The Punishment of Gaza. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gideon Levy.
Thank you so much.
And many analysts are describing what is happening now in Israel is an Israeli version of the Arab Spring. How did this youthful rebellion, which started as a tent city, grow into such a national protest movement with one of the biggest demonstrations in Israel's history in the streets?
Yeah, I think yesterday it was the biggest demonstration ever in Tel Aviv. It started like all those so-called revolutions start, gradually, in the most unexpected time, by the most unexpected generation. It started about the prices of cottage cheese, and gradually it became a protest against the cost of living and about the cost of housing. But now it's much broader than this, and hundreds of thousands of Israelis are now, the third Saturday, week after week, going to the streets and expressing their protest against the life standard in Israel, against the prices, against the tycoons, and against the government.
Well, my understanding is that Israel is second in the world to the United States, which leads the world in this, with the dubious distinction of having the greatest disparity in wealth between the a few people at the very top who have most of the wealth and a growing number at the bottom who have less and less. That, given that Israel started out as this kind of socialist experiment, it's fairly hard to understand how things have changed that radically.
Yeah, I guess this list concerns to the Western world, because I guess that in the third world there are much bigger gaps.
Oh, I would think, exactly. In the industrial world, not in terms of dictatorships in the third world. Yeah,
exactly.
But go ahead.
Still, it's very worrying, and it's a new phenomena, because back in my childhood, there were almost no rich ones and almost no poor ones, and we were more or less quite equal. I remember from my childhood, I grew up in Tel Aviv in quite a middle-class neighborhood, and we were all equal. This changed mainly in the last years, thanks to a very aggressive, capitalistic policy of the right-wing government. And here we are with those gaps, with middle class, which is paying more and more and getting less and less. And I think this is what brought the people finally, after many years of total apathy and indifference, this brought finally the people to the streets.
So what contributed to this, though? Again, Gideon Levy, Israeli journalist who writes for Haaretz, we're talking about these massive demonstrations in Israel that began with a youthful protest in tent cities on the wealthiest shopping street and in front of the prime minister's residence, now growing into a massive popular movement with the largest demonstrations in Israel's history. Now, two factors seem to, at least to my mind, be at play here. One is the influx of immigrants from the former Soviet Union who came out of a socialist experiment which they were fleeing from, and two, the growth and power of Israeli tycoons, many of whom are also Americans, like Sheldon Adelson, who not only is spending a lot of money on West Bank settlements, along with Moskowitz here in Southern California, who owns the Bicycle Club Casino. My understanding is that Adelson has become kind of Israel's Rupert Murdoch, with a kind of right-wing Fox News type television operation that is also, you know, pushing the country to the right.
Yeah, but I think the main problem is a very local one, and the big families, the rich families, are Israeli families. The names you just mentioned are around, but I don't think the problem is because of them. I think that the Israeli society had grown into a situation in which very few families are holding much too much. All of them are local families, and they made their money quite rapidly, and the gaps became deeper and deeper. One should remember that the unemployment rate in Israel is very low, very, very low, much better than in most of the countries in the West. But the problem is that people who work cannot make it. It's not about unemployment. It's about very low salaries and very high costs. Also, the prices in Israel, now we realize, are much higher than in the West. You can compare any product from McDonald's to Coca-Cola, from a washing machine to washing powder, and you will realize that we in Israel pay more than in most of the countries in the world, and the profits go to those tycoons. All this is, from now on, unacceptable.
But isn't there a dimension, though, with housing? This is about the reason they're intense is that they can't afford housing. And what I understand a lot of the protesters are saying is that our government is spending all of this money subsidizing West Bank housing, which is obviously causing political problems since it's on disputed territory, that's a big part of the protest. And indeed, I understand that the Hilltop Youth, the right-wing settlers, have joined in the protest in order to co-opt and distract that very anger.
Unfortunately, this is not the case, because the protest, until now at least, is not aimed against the settlements and the enormous sums of money which go to the settlements. And I say unfortunately so, because people still don't see the connection between the construction of settlements and the social services, which are getting worse and worse. Same about also the defense budget, which is huge in Israel and not always necessary to be so huge. But people don't do yet the connection between the money that goes there and the money that lacks here. So the protest, by all means, is not directed against the settlements. And this is very unfortunate. So
I've got it wrong then, at least, that the Hilltop Youth then are an equal part of this coalition, because I'd seen reports that many of the protesters in the tent cities felt that that the Hilltop Youth were jumping on the bandwagon to distract from some of the core issues.
No, they, a very small group of them, joined for 1 or 2 days, mm-hmm. and they put some tents along hundreds of tents in the center of Tel Aviv. But it was more of a provocation, and you can't say that they are part of it, because it was really just a very symbolic number of few young settlers who came there, and they were partly rejected, not enough. But you can't say that they are part of this protest, by all means not.
So tell me then, because I'd read some of your pieces that you've written about this, Gideon Levy, again, journalist with Haaretz, that you felt a certain pride for the first time. You felt that the Israeli left that had been sort of demoralized and dormant was coming back. But that's not what you're saying now.
No, I was very proud of being an Israeli, because I saw, after many, many years of apathy, of the Israeli society being really in a status of coma, that this society wakes up, and this by itself is a lot. Still, it's not aimed to the right aims, I think, this protest, but the fact that there is some kind of protest, any kind of protest, means a lot in a society which was so apathetic and so indifferent. And also the very democratic nature of this protest makes me feel very good about Israel, because it's really a very, very democratic protest. Those young people who are leading it are getting their decisions in a very democratic way. There is no violence whatsoever, and this makes a big difference from the Arab Spring. Neither the police, nor the army, nor the protesters are using any kind of violence. And to see hundreds of thousands of Israelis going to the streets, screaming, calling for the fall of this government, and doing it in a very democratic way, that's a good reason to feel very proud. I wish this protest would have been aimed also to some other targets, like ending the occupation, like putting an end to the settlements, but this does not happen. And still, I think it is a very, very fascinating beginning of a people who wakes up.
Well, just in the last minute here, what is happening with Netanyahu and his response? Because prior to this, there was speculation, and you probably know about the former Mossad head, Maya Dagan, saying that Netanyahu is sort of getting paranoid and under siege and doesn't know what to do about the Palestinian declaration of statehood in September, and he's likely to strike out and maybe even attack Iran. That speculation I've been looking into as well. But you would think if that was the case, then Netanyahu's even under even more pressure and is feeling even more besieged. So are we going to see a war to distract us?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because this will not be accepted by the Israeli people right now. Attack on Iran will also not get the approval of the United States, and without the approval of the United States, it's out of the question. It's really more of a kind of speculation, not to say conspiration theory. I don't think that Netanyahu can do much about it. The Israeli people will not accept it. It will be accepted. And this is also maybe a new development, that people will be much more critical and much more suspicious. And I don't think right now this is on the table. It might develop there, but there are no signs that this is the direction.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Gideon Levy.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Gideon Levy, who's an Israeli journalist who writes for Haaretz and is the former spokesman for Shimon Peres. His books include Twilight Zone, Life and Death Under the Israeli Occupation, and The Punishment of Gaza.